I've been with my partner for several years and we're in the thick of parenting. Somewhere in it all, I feel like we've just drifted apart. I still really like him. We get along well. There's no big fight, no crisis. I just don't feel in love the way I used to. And I don't know how to get back there. Is that even possible? That's one of the most common things I hear from people who come to see me. Not in a crisis, not about to leave, but quietly wondering how they got here and whether they can find their way back. Welcome to This Complex Life. I am your host, Marie Vakarkas, and each week we try to make a bit more sense of the messy, complicated, and every now and again, gloriously beautiful business of being human, the relationships we're in and the mental health tangled up in them. I'm really glad you're here. Let's get into it. Today I'm answering this question, and I think it's going to land for a lot of people who wouldn't describe their relationship as being in trouble, but they know that something's missing. Short answer, yes, totally possible. What this question describes is a common example of the day-to-day life happening. Things get busy. People are working. If they're raising children, then there's all the logistics and extra care that comes with that, and add in a few winter bugs and stomach bugs and childcare, flu season going around. There's always something. Putting time and energy into maintaining your relationship can feel so far away. And it's not to make people feel guilty. It's not to say that you're doing something wrong. It's really common. And it's really easy to slip into co-parenting and feeling like housemates or ships in the night. And that can be really sad. I'm seeing a lot of people come to see me, you know, for couples therapy who met around the COVID stuff happening, and they had a few years in lockdown where they really got to spend a lot of time together. And for some people, it was an incredibly stressful time. For me, that was a terrible time. I felt like I was in solitary confinement and I felt really restricted, and it caused a lot of distress for me, and that impacted my relationship. But for some people, having their partner work from home, being more available, and if they had children, they could divide and conquer childcare responsibilities and work and have free time together because that commute was taken away. Maybe some of those extra social activities were taken away. And for some people, their relationship really thrived when they had the opportunity to spend some really good quality time together and have that balance of both people contributing to the child rearing activities, maintaining the household. And so I'm seeing people now with 5 or 6 year olds and they're back at work, they're working full time, they're dropping off kids at school and trying to figure out all the different after school sports that didn't exist before. And they've lost something in their relationship. They've lost curiosity, they've lost connection, maybe they've lost intimacy, even spending time together, creating new memories as a couple. A lot of the times when people do have a date night, and I sit there sometimes in a restaurant and I don't eavesdrop, but I can hear what people are saying. They're talking about logistics. They're on a date night and they're talking about the kids or what things have to be paid and trying to find times to meet with a financial advisor or book in the accountant, or they're weighing up the cost of, should I get a cleaner, or how can one of our parents help out with the kids? And that's fine. We need to do those things as well. But it does leave something lacking. And this doesn't happen overnight. This is a gradual drifting apart, a gradual disconnection. And some people don't notice it. They don't notice it straight away. It can take months or even years to recognize, oh, my partner doesn't know me anymore. Maybe I've even lost bits of myself and I don't really know them. They ask, how was your day? Say, good. How are the kids? Great. How was work? Fine. And maybe that's where it stops. And if that's you, if you don't even know what to ask anymore, I do have a whole heap of questions that you can ask your partner. They're free. You can download them. There'll be a link to those in the show notes or in the description box. You can download that. Check out those questions. They might give you some, extra things to talk about. So why drifting apart is different to falling out of love? I think this is an interesting paradox. Drifting apart implies to me that there's a level of intimacy, and I'm not talking about sexual intimacy. I'm talking about this idea of being known that isn't as present. And you can look at your partner, and I've seen this in my couples all the time that I work with, where they love how much of an amazing parent their partner is. They love how they play with the kids, or they love how dedicated they are. And for some people, having kids is really healing. They look at their partner and they think, you're giving our children something I didn't have, and I'm so grateful. And the falling out of love, it happens slowly too. It needs to be watered. It's like a plant. We need to keep watering it to keep it alive. If the plant has no sunlight and no water and it dies, we don't just say that plant wasn't resilient enough. We say that plant didn't get what it needed. And everyone has different needs. So some people might be like a cactus that don't need much water. And for someone else, they might be one of those lilies, those peace lilies that kind of, when they're dehydrated, they're really floppy and they're telling you, I need a water. I think that's where I'm going to stop with the plant metaphor. But you can see that things do take maintenance and tending to, and relationships do take that. Friendships, marriages, parenting, all of these things. It's not just a contract you sign. You don't just say, I am now your best friend. You might sign a marriage certificate, of course, but that doesn't guarantee all of those things are just there. It's not like a position description that you just sign and it just happens all the time. You need to keep working on it. So to answer this question, yes, you can find love again. You can find that spark again, but it doesn't just happen out of nowhere. So to rewind a little bit, what this drifting apart looks like, here are some of the signs that you can look out for, or you could might even recognize in your own relationship that could be opportunities for some curiosity and a chance to examine what's actually happening. First one, you notice that your patterns become functional rather than romantic. A birthday rolls around and it's, oh, I have to get them a gift, rather than, oh, I have so many ideas of what they might like and I can't wait to spoil them. An anniversary comes around and it's, okay, we need to celebrate our anniversary. Let's book in this thing, get it over and done with, rather than, oh, I can't wait for this. I'm going to pick a restaurant that's our favorite, or we're going to try something new and see what it's like together, or I'd love to plan a weekend away and spoil my partner. And you can start to see that there's a difference between it just being a tick box exercise and functional rather than romantic and genuine. And I know there is a cost of living crisis, and I know some people listening to this will be like, well, that's all well and good, but blah, 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 we can't afford it. What about the kids? They're excuses. You can have a picnic on the floor of your living room when the kids are asleep. You can pick some flowers from your garden. There are ways to make it cheap and intentional and romantic. It's about the setup. It's about clearing a space physically and emotionally and making that dedicated effort. If you love game nights and you used to do that all the time, you can reintroduce that. You can get butcher's paper and a pen and play Pictionary. Money is not the be all and end all. It is a poor excuse, and it's not good enough to just say we can't afford it. You can afford romance. It does not cost you anything. If you notice that your patterns are functional rather than romantic, that's the first sign I want you to look out for. Second, conversation has become about logistics. What time are you getting up in the morning? Are you going to the gym? Are you going, who's walking the dog? What about lunches? What's for dinner? Have you paid this bill? Do you need the car tomorrow? All of those things. Okay, day to day, we need some of that. But if that's the majority of your conversations, you're not building up that knowledge base of each other. And we need to know that. We wouldn't have fallen in love with someone if all of our conversation was just about logistics. We need to show curiosity. We need to catch bids for connection. I talk a lot about bids for connection. But these are those moments where someone makes an observation out loud, a comment, and the partner or the person listening responds to that in a positive way. So it could be maybe you see a funny thing happen on the street. You look up and you tell your partner, oh my goodness, I can't believe that person got tangled up with their dog as they were walking them. Look at how funny, partners get, whatever. Okay, so that's ignoring the bid and responding in a sort of dismissive way. Another way to respond poorly might be like, what are you looking at the neighbors for? Mind your own business. You're such a busybody, blah, 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 and yelling at them or critiquing them. Leave me alone. I'm busy. Another option might be like, oh my goodness, what just happened? I missed it. And just taking a moment to connect with what that person's saying. So bids for connection are super important here. So if your conversation has become mostly about logistics, if you notice that those bids for connection are not being caught and responded to positively, that's a huge sign as well that you're slowly drifting apart. And maybe this isn't so slowly, especially if those bids for connection are matched with aggression, like a don't bother me, I'm really busy, or criticism around you're always so blah, blah, blah. That's not going to be helpful at all. And it's going to be really damaging to the quality of that relationship. And I like to use the analogy, and I think it's come from the Gottman around like building up a love bank. But think about having an old school piggy bank or a money box, if you can remember those days. We need to keep putting deposits in to be able to make a withdrawal. And I see a lot of couples, they're in overdraft. They have withdrawn so much out of that, that there's not enough in there to keep them going through tough times. So keeping your relationship strong, building up that those deposits and continuing to make them is a real buffer for when things are going to be hard. And it's inevitable. Things are going to be hard. You will hit rough patches. You need to have that buffer there. You need to have that financial, emotional buffer in that piggy bank. The third point I want to make here is the small moments of connection have quietly disappeared. Now, this fits in really nicely with the bids for connection, but that can also be sitting on the couch and having a cuddle. You might be on your phone most of the time and your partner be on their phone and you're at opposite ends of the couch. If that's happening day to day, you're missing out those quality moments, even if they're small, of connection. It's coming home, walking through the door and giving your partner a hug and a kiss and making eye contact. It's not, you don't have to be like a happy puppy that's wagging their tail being like, oh my goodness, you're home. But it's, hey, babe, nice to see you, a hug and a kiss. And these are some of the basic fundamentals I teach my couples. And when we unpack their schedules and their routines, for so many of them, these are common things that are missing. They're missing that morning kiss, like good morning. They're missing the good night. They're missing that cuddle on the couch. They're not connecting in those small moments throughout the day. And that is a really huge red flag for me. And so I want you to be very aware of this, aware of the importance of those small moments of connection and find ways to bring them back into your relationship if they're missing. The fourth one, and again, this sort of fits in with a lot of it, but you're on autopilot. And that's not great for your own mental health either. So if you're just going through the motions, now autopilot is different to routine, but if you're just kind of going through the motions and sometimes you get home and you think, I don't even remember my drive. I don't remember how I got here. I don't remember, what did we have for dinner yesterday versus today? That's a cluttered, busy mind, maybe a cluttered, busy schedule. And it's not really great for anybody. And that can be really dangerous in terms of exhaustion and fatigue if you're adding that into it, but also for self-care. And that can be hard to break. We need to find ways to cultivate a sense of mindfulness and calm. But if you notice that you're on autopilot in your own life, it's probably happening in your relationship as well. And the last one, there are probably heaps more. I could probably write a whole book on this, and maybe I'll do some more episodes if other people write in with similar questions. But the last one I want to point out is you're coexisting rather than connecting. And you can see the bit of a theme here is you're around each other, but you're not interacting. You're maybe talking about logistics, but you're not really connecting about deeper things. So you're living like housemates, employer, employee, maybe one person manages things, delegates tasks, you get stuff done. Okay, that's not connection. Just being around is not connection. And so you can see that there are a number of ways that you can slowly drift apart and might not even realize this is happening. And I suspect for the person who asked that question, they might recognize one or two or all of these patterns happening in their relationship, and it might have happened gradually over time. So understanding why this happens, you might even have some instincts about it, but it's really important. And it's a lot easier to know what to actually do once you understand what's happening and why. So when some of the common things that I see in couples I work with is parenting takes over everything. And it makes sense. You have a baby that literally needs you to stay alive. It needs constant touch, connection, reassurance. It needs to be fed, changed. It can't regulate its emotions, its temperature, its sleep. That is a really challenging time for adults when they're raising a child. And so that's the start often of where I see this happen. I don't see it happen as much in couples with our kids, but some of these patterns still very much apply regardless of parenting responsibilities. That drifting apart, that can be through focusing on studies or on work or on hobbies. So it's not just with children. But when you do have children in the picture, the relationship gets deprioritized because it seems more about, it seems more stable than the kids. So it's cool. I love my partner. This is great. We're good. Now let's focus on the kids. And who knows what crap we're going to deal with on a day-to-day basis. It could be a day where you've got the house covered in stuff and things because it's been a really hard day to regulate them. And it can be an absolute dream. And then there can be an illness or a meltdown. You don't know what you're going to get. And so it makes sense that you try to focus all your energy on that because you think the relationship's good. That's solid. I need to work on this chaos that's happening right now. And so because everything seems fine, you stop investing in it. And yet we're adding in extra challenges. And that's where those cracks can start to appear. And I see it happen even from early stages of pregnancy, where a female partner is starting to be really preoccupied with maybe health and nutrition and fetal health. And her and the partner don't get a chance or opportunity to talk about those things. Or when they try to talk about it, they get dismissed or they get told that they're overreacting and they're in. So that's one of the things I probably should have mentioned as one of the red flags, but is sometimes I see people really trying to talk about these things. They're trying to connect, but their partner is trying to fix it or invest it. And I say this on so many episodes, stop trying to fix it. You can empathize with someone's distress. You can validate their experience, even if you don't agree and even if you wouldn't feel the same in that situation. And to add to that, not everything is about you. And so if someone's come into the house and said, oh my God, there's crap everywhere, that doesn't mean they're saying you have left crap everywhere. They might just be expressing their frustration. They know that there are children around. They know that life is busy and hard. They know that you're doing your best. They know they are doing their best. And yet still there might be crap everywhere. So I guess I want people to take from that is don't be so sensitive to think everything's about you, but also if your partner is expressing distress, empathize with it and validate it. Don't jump in trying to fix it. Don't say, I told you we should get a cleaner, or it was a nice day outside, why didn't you take the kids out, or some other excuse. Just say, yeah, it can be so overwhelming, or are you okay? Looks like you've had a tough day. So checking in with them, empathizing with how they're feeling, without trying to fix it, and definitely don't invalidate it and don't get defensive. It's probably not about you. So what actually works? None of this requires weekend getaways or grand gestures. They might help. I love a weekend getaway, but your problems will just be there when you come back. And they might even follow you on the trip. The amount of times I've had a couple come to see me and I'm like, how was your week? And I'm like, oh, we've been away and we fought the whole time. And I think that's because if you're trying to have a weekend away as a way to build a bridge and connection, you might have all of these expectations and it might feel really pressured and they don't get met and then everything just crumbles. And so one example that comes to mind here is about how people like to go away. So they might be like, we need a weekend away. Yes, we do. It'd be great. Amazing. They book a weekend away and one person is so content sitting by a fireplace, reading a book, sipping a glass of wine, and the other person wants to go for a hike and wants to play a board game and interact. And the one reading the books, I've had a really busy week. I'm just happy to chill. And the other person's, I feel really disconnected and I've had a busy week too. And I just want to get out and enjoy it and make the most of where we're at. And then a fight happens because they have a different idea of what they need to unwind or what they'd like or their expectations of it, of what's happening for the other person. And so our expectations are a huge cause of fight. And I talk about this in my relationship reset program, and I have questions for some of the common areas that I see people fight about and how we celebrate things and our rituals, even how we spend money, all themes throughout so many of the couples that I work with. And I have a whole bunch of prompts and questions and ways to support you to have those conversations. So you can check out my relationship reset course. It's on my website. It'll be in the show notes. It'll be in the description box. Okay, so you don't have to wait for a crisis to start. You don't have to wait for a crisis to start. Here are some ways that you can gently bring up this conversation. If you're listening to this and you're thinking, yeah, that's us, that's me. I could have easily been the person that submitted that letter to Marie. Here's what I want you to do. Start the conversation with what you've noticed and how you feel. But start it with I. And I want to just clarify something, saying, I feel like you don't something, or I feel like when, blah, 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 are not emotions. They are not feelings. Describing what the other person is doing is almost guaranteed to trigger defensiveness in them. Start with a feeling. I feel overwhelmed when I walk in the house and I see the whole house is just chaotic. I understand that we both have busy lives. I just find it really hard, and I'd like to find some ways to make coming home a bit easier. Okay, so you can see how that is different to, I feel like you don't pick up after yourself and you leave everything to me when I get home. Guaranteed, probably going to start a fight, right? So think about how you're phrasing things. If you're describing the other person, you're most likely going to get a defensive response. They're going to feel attacked and criticized. And if you're the person on the other end receiving this and your partner is trying and fumbling through it, they will make mistakes. We all make mistakes. Try to remember my earlier point, it's not about you, and see if we can come to a different way of having that conversation. So instead of jumping to, I've done my best and I've tried to clean up, it's, I can see that you're really frustrated right now. Your tone matters here. You can say the same words and have very different meanings. You can say, I see you're really frustrated, and that be out of concern. And you can say, I see that you're very frustrated, and that be really judging. So tone matters so much here. So things like, I miss us rather than you're absent. I'd like to spend more time together rather than you never make time for me. I feel disconnected. I'd like to go on a date night, and it would be great if you could organize it and surprise me rather than you never organize anything for us. So you can see that the way you phrase it is going to change the whole conversation. And I see it almost in every single couple that I work with. I have done it too. It was one of my biggest learnings studying couples therapy and being a couples therapist, was how to change that way of asking for what you need instead of it being a what the person's not doing, asking for what you would like instead. And it's been one of the most amazing, it's been one of the most impactful things for me in my career. Picking a time to have this conversation is also really important. Don't pick a time when you're most wrecked, okay? Some people say, okay, we'll do it Friday night, the kids are out, or if you have been working full time, if you have had all the stimulation of pickups and drop-offs and logistics and work, and you're pooped on a Friday night, that might be the absolute worst time to have this conversation. So you might need to pick another time. For some people, it's really funny. Couples seem to pair up with night owl and early bird. And the early bird wants to have it in the morning. And the night owl's, no, I'm still waking up. And then the other person, cool, it's 10 o'clock now, I'm ready to have this conversation. The other person, I've been asleep for half an hour. You might need to schedule this just like you would an important work meeting in the middle of the day. You might need to have a long lunch. You might need to align your RDOs. You might need to do it on a Saturday. You need to find a way that works for both of you, so you're not setting each other up for failure and you're not criticizing the other person for their body and their brain working on a different rhythm to yours. Don't just say, I'm always ready in the mornings, you never want to talk. Cut the crap. Stop setting them up for failure. If you know that they're not a morning person and you are, stop expecting them to be different and change and say, I prefer mornings. I know you prefer evenings. Let's find a time during the day that works for both of us. Stop setting them up for failure and just expecting that will change and weaponizing that. Don't use that as an excuse of, I'm ready all the mornings and you're sleeping in. Not good. So some things you can DIY. If you're stuck with these conversations, you can check out my relationship reset course. You can check out the open-ended questions that I have. Both of those are available to you. And I want you to keep in mind that falling back in love is not about grand gestures. It's not about big things. I worked with a couple in a marathon session. I know that sounds really scary, but I promise you it's not that bad. And it was me and this couple for 2 full days of therapy. And I got an email a few weeks later, and it was one of my most heartwarming emails. And the person, and she wrote back and said, thank you so much. I have fallen in love with my husband again. And that was after a weekend of deep conversation. Yes, some conflict resolution. Yes, looking at different patterns and how they responded to each other. But mostly it was learning new things about each other, learning the content and context behind some of the things that activated them, some of the parenting choices they made, and actually One of the most beautiful conversations I witnessed them have was a more vulnerable one about how they felt as they approached empty nest season. They had children who were slowly about to fly the nest. One of them had already made those plans. And instead of pretending it was all fine, they knew it would be fine. They knew their kids would be okay and welcome back at any time. But what I saw really change how they responded to each other was when they shared their hopes, their dreams for their kids and for their relationship, and their fears. And they vocalized that grief and that uncertainty. And they each got to hear that the other person had some similar experiences. It gets me a little teary even just thinking about it. Those conversations, and they had many of them during that weekend with me, it changed everything for them. And so it's not big grand gestures. Yes, a marathon session was quite an investment, but the power came from the conversations. All that information was already stored there. They just needed a bit of scaffolding and some help to get that conversation started and to be able to hear each other. So what I want you to take away from this, if it's anything, is put deposits into your emotional piggy bank or tokens into your love bank, whatever it is you want to call it. You need to put those deposits in, and that can start today. It can start from when you see your partner, when you come back together at the end of the day, just giving them a hug and a kiss and saying, "Nice to see you." It can be a text message saying, "I appreciate that you made me coffee this morning." Okay, it can start small, and those small moments over time have a huge impact. You chose each other once, you can choose each other again. So, dear writer who wrote that beautiful question in, yes, it is possible. It might be tricky. You might need some extra support, but I totally think that you can fall back in love with your partner again.